Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
More tributes to the late Rich Trumka, a good jobs report. Today is the start of Safe and Sound Week. We'll explain. And on the show, the Texas Labor Federation and the plight of the direct care workforce in healthcare. Welcome to the Monday, August 9th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in a few minutes with Leonard Aguilar. We had him on the show a couple months back. Leonard is a native of San Antonio, Texas, and he became the first Latino to hold a top office in the Texas Labor Federation. He is now the secretary treasurer. Started his career in labor with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters. That was Local 142 in San Antonio. Worked his way up, winning election to several offices in that union. And then he became an instructor in various registered apprenticeship programs. Later, executive director of the Texas Building and Construction Trades Council. More recently, as political director of the Southwest Pipe Trades Association, which represents plumbers, pipe fitters, welders, HVAC technicians. And that's in three states. Great guy. Great guy. He's a fighter. And the first thing we're going to get into, obviously, is the passing of Rich Trumka. We'll talk about that and how Rich really tried to turn Texas around. Interesting story. He'll touch on that. And we're going to get into the Texas Climate Jobs Project. Now, this is a major new program. Just came out last week. 55-page report that sets the goal to create more than 1.1 million solid middle-class jobs in the coming years in wind and solar generation while protecting, and this is important, while protecting the livelihoods of workers transitioning from fossil fuels. That is huge because, as you know, in the fossil fuel industry, good jobs, union jobs, great benefits. You don't want to lose those. So we got to do more organizing. And that's what this report is going to call for. It offers proposals aimed at intersecting crises of the pandemic, that being income inequality, worsening climate crisis. And altogether, we're talking 27 unions. 27 unions are part of this report, representing a cross section of the labor movement in Texas. We're also going to get into COVID. Texas right now is a hot spot for that. And the legislature, many of the Democrats, are gone because the governor and the Republicans in Texas really want to turn the screws to the right when it comes to changing the way people vote in the state of Texas. And they are following a similar lead in Georgia, Florida, many states doing that. Right now, about 15% of the electorate in the country are under voter suppression laws. It's amazing. Leonard will address that. Robert Espinoza will be checking in with us later in the show, and he comes from an organization called PHI National, which deals with the direct care workforce, primarily in healthcare. He's a vice president of policy, where he oversees national advocacy, research, public education. So we'll talk about that workforce, which is a very low-paid workforce. Average wage around $12 an hour, I understand, and there's a lot of turnover. And there will be a lot of growth because people are getting older. They need care. Very simple. Very simply put. So Robert's going to be our second guest on the show. Couple of stories here. U.S. employers added a higher than expected 943,000 jobs last month. That's from the Labor Department. They announced it on Friday. Now, that didn't change the unemployment rate very much. It declined by just a percentage point to 5.4%. Still higher than the pre-pandemic figure of 3.5%, which was in February of 2020. Employment in July is up by 16.7 million jobs since April of last year, but down by almost 6 million from the economy's pre-pandemic levels. Notable job gains in July occurred in leisure and hospitality, which saw an uptick of 380,000 jobs. Local government, education, rise of 221,000 jobs, and in professional business services, increase of 60,000 jobs. Factories gained 27,000 jobs, according to the Labor Department, gains mostly seen in durable goods manufacturing, which added about 20,000 jobs. Now, that sector is still down 433,000 jobs since the start of the pandemic. Broken down by racial groups, the uneven impact of the economic downturn remained quite apparent. Listen to this. The unemployment rate in July, 4.8% for white workers, 8.2% for blacks, 6.6% for Hispanic workers, 5.3% for Asian workers. Comment here from Marty Walsh, our Secretary of Labor. He said our labor force is healing, our economy is reopening, and people are getting back to work. But we still have a way to go. Economic recovery depends on our commitment to public health. So I urge every eligible person to get vaccinated against COVID-19 who has not done so already. It's how to protect yourself, protect your family, and help our economy move forward. Marty goes on to say, we head toward Labor Day with work to do, but with momentum and with hope. We have the opportunity to create millions of good jobs through the bipartisan infrastructure deal, as well as empower working families and create a more inclusive workforce through President Biden's Build Back Better agenda. And it's my understanding they're getting really, really close on getting that infrastructure deal signed off. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Labor is encouraging the nation's employers to commit to workplace safety and health and join its Occupational Safety and Health Administration in observing Safe Plus Sound Week, which starts today, goes from today until Sunday. It's a nationwide event that recognizes the successes of workplace safety and health programs and offers information and ideas on how to keep America's workers safe. And here's the good news. In 2020, more than 3,400 businesses helped raise awareness about workers' safety and health. Successful safety and health programs can identify and manage workplace hazards before they cause injury or illness and can increase worker satisfaction, also improve productivity, and reduce costs associated with workplace injuries. Comment here from James Frederick. James comes from the steelworkers, and he is the acting Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA. He said, each year, millions of workers suffer job-related injuries or illnesses, and thousands die in work-related incidents. These incidents hurt workers and their families and harm businesses as well. Most importantly, effective safety and health programs save lives and prevent injuries. They also help businesses improve safety and health compliance. So today is Safe Plus Sound Week. Praise and condolences led by President Biden poured in as news spread of Rich Trumka's death from a heart attack at the age of 72. He died last Thursday while on a family vacation in the South. A vacation, mind you, that he interrupted the day before. Why? Because he wanted to attend the rally with members of his home union, the United Mine Workers. We're talking about the strike at Warrior Met. So he goes to the picket line, comes home the next day, and that's when he suffered a fatal heart attack. And that was very typical of Rich Trumka. I mean, he cared so much about the workers in America, and Biden spoke to that. I want to play a little clip here on the show after he heard the news, and this was last Thursday. He was addressing the United Auto Workers. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
I learned a couple of hours ago when my staff came in that a close friend of mine, and I think of many of you as well, Rich Trumka, died today from a heart attack. The reason I was a few minutes late coming out, and I apologize for that, I was talking to his wife and to his son who called. He wasn't just a great labor leader. He was a friend. He's a friend of yours too, Debbie, I think. And he's someone I could confide in. And you knew whatever he said he'd do, he would do. It was simple, Tommy. You knew him well as well. He was always there. He was an American worker, always fighting for working people, protecting their wages, their safety, their pensions, and their ability to build a middle-class life. I've also believed that the middle class built America, but I know who built the middle class, unions. Unions built the middle class. There's no doubt that Rich Trumka helped build unions all across this country. My heart goes out to Barbara and Rich Jr. and the grandkids. And I might point out that, I used to always kid him. He was from soft coal country. I was from hard coal country. We used to have this thing about, he used to be president of the United Mine Workers. And that's how he got started.
Speaking of which, we have a comment from Cecil Roberts, who is the current president of the Mine Workers. He said the following: the global labor movement has lost a giant. Rich Trumka was more than a leader of the American labor movement. He was an unequaled voice for the workers around the world. Richard and I were partners in leadership at the Mine Workers for many years, but we were more than that. He was my brother. He was my friend. He was my confidant. The hearts and prayers of the entire Mine Workers family are with his wife, his children, and his grandchildren. We will miss him terribly, but we know he has joined Mother Jones, John L. Lewis, William Green, Phil Murray, and all the other mine worker leaders who have gone before him. Rest in peace, brother. I will miss you. Cecil Roberts, president of the Mine Workers, and there's more that we'll be getting through throughout the week here on the show. Quick break. When we come back, Leonard Aguilar of the Texas Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line one, and welcome back to the show, Mr. Leonard Aguilar. And Leonard is the Secretary Treasurer of the Texas AFL-CIO, and he's the first Latino to hold a top office in that federation. Began his career in labor with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, Local 142, out of San Antonio, Texas. Leonard, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Good afternoon. How are y'all doing?
We're doing well. Doing well. We're warm up here. Maybe just as warm as Texas. You get some serious heat down there. And I'm going to get into climate change. But first, I'm sure you, like so many in labor, are still shocked at the sudden passing of Rich Trumka last Thursday, it was. And I can't believe he was on a family vacation. I don't know if you know this, Leonard. He was on a family vacation down in the South. Don't know where. But he took Wednesday off because they had a rally for the coal miners. You know, he comes from the coal miners union. And he took that time off from his family to go on the picket line. And then he went back to his vacation. And that's where he died of a heart attack. I was wondering, I know a lot of federations are issuing statements. I'd like to hear what the Texas AFL-CIO was saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. And you know, from our president, Rick Levy, and the entire team at the Texas AFL-CIO, we've issued our statement just like you said, just like everybody has across the country. But, I mean, just our thoughts and prayers are with the Trumka family and you know, family and friends. This is a huge loss for everybody. You know, President Trumka was a friend and a leader, and is definitely going to be missed. And again, from everybody at the Texas AFL-CIO, this is our thoughts and prayers are with the family for sure. So, yes, sir.
I understand too. He spent a lot of time in Texas when other labor leaders kind of wrote the state off. Ah, it's a red state. It's a right to work state. You know, it's going to be tough to do anything there. But he had a different point of view, didn't he?
He sure did. He sure did. He was one of the few that paid attention early to Texas and like he did across the country. He was a leader for sure, and was able to bring attention to Texas and help bring extra resources to Texas and the state Fed and our different affiliates across the state and help bolster the labor movement in Texas. We wouldn't be where we're at today with the opportunities that we have in front of us if it wasn't for President Trumka and the leadership at the National AFL. Without a doubt, we owe a lot to President Trumka and the help the foresight that he had for Texas, and are truly appreciative of that.
Big shoes to fill, no doubt about that. And the way the Constitution is with the AFL-CIO, Liz Shuler, who was the Secretary-Treasurer up until last week, automatically becomes a president. And that'll be official, I believe, when they have their convention, which was postponed till next year. It's just hard to believe, really hard to believe. Very shocking. All right, let's talk about this climate jobs project, and I was reading about this. It's called the Texas Climate Jobs Project, a 55-page report. And the whole idea here is to create a lot of good jobs, over a million of them, middle-class jobs. All right. Leonard, this is your opportunity. What's this all about?
Well, we're proud of the work that's been done. It's a project that we've come together. It's been over a year in the making. You know, the leadership that we have, again, with our president, Rick Levy, and Moncedat Garibay, who was the previous Secretary-Treasurer, coming together and helping create this task force over a year and a half ago, or just about a year and a half ago, of a different group of unions that we have across the state, those that are in the oil and gas to those that are not, from teachers, CWA, communication workers, you know, just across the board. And we're proud of the final report because it was a complete buy-in. We just had it accepted at our constitutional convention last week, and are looking forward to the work and the opportunities moving ahead. Our executive director, Bo Delp, is somebody who understands the issues and is passionate about the work and, you know, hitting the ground running. It's a great opportunity because the jobs that are coming and the climate issue is something that's going to happen, or not going to happen. I'm sorry. The climate issue is something that is happening, and we have to try to get in front of it. We have to try to make sure to have these jobs that are already here and those that aren't here yet become, like you said, those middle class, those union jobs, those good paying union jobs. And that is the main focus of what we're trying to do at the moment. Yes, sir.
Leonard, what's glaring in the report is the transition from fossil fuel work to wind and solar. And you know, there's been some pushback on that. So I'm asking you, this report, does it have a game plan on how that's going to be done?
It's going to take teamwork for sure, and that's been the whole reason of coming together and having the way we've been saying it for a minute now, even before I started with the Texas AFL-CIO is having the difficult conversations, and that's the thing that we're going to have to continue to do. And we understand that we're going to have members and we're going to have affiliates that might not be. Might not feel warm and fuzzy about the Texas Climate Jobs Project. But the idea is simple. It's about jobs. And we need to make sure that we try to maintain and secure the jobs that we have now in the industry and secure future jobs in the industry. So at the end of the day, we are trying to help and maintain a level of dignity at the workplace, right? And make sure everybody has the safe working conditions and the good pay and the benefits to go along. The union job idea is what we're trying to get across right now.
Mm-hmm. You point out in the report 1.1 million jobs, good, middle class, union jobs. I'm just wondering if you have any specifics on how you arrived at that number. The timetable here, are we looking at 2, 5 years, 10 years? Can you give us some details on that?
I mean, the timetable is going to vary, and how things. I mean, we're running downhill at the moment right now. Things are happening, and the industry and the energy sectors are changing, and we're hoping to just try to keep up with the trend. I mean, there's already. Can't remember off the top of my head, excuse me, but just the amount of folks that are doing the work on the wind wind side of things, and you know those folks are doing the work and they're not receiving great pay. So we need to make sure and try to address that and work towards getting that done. The jobs are coming, the amount of jobs are coming, and the time frame is now. We need to get there now, and we need to try to figure out how to do that. And we're not going to do it alone. It's going to take a group effort. It's going to take the unions coming together. It's going to take the communities coming together, because not only is it a job thing, it's a community issue, a city issue. We all understand that we have a task in front of us, and we're just looking forward to the opportunity of working with everybody and getting this done.
Leonard, let's go back to February when the power grid shut down in Texas because of the freeze. And you know as well as I that's all tied into climate change. I'm just wondering, has that kind of prompted this news, this jobs report here? And are people starting to realize that, hey, you know what? We got to do something right away. Is that what's simmering in Texas right now?
It's unfortunate that it took a tragedy like that to have those hundreds of lives lost and for us to be in this day and age to be without being able to turn on the light switch and get a drink of water, you know, from our faucet, to have the state literally minutes away from a major shutdown. And that just shows the impact, not only of just the climate issue, but just of the leadership that we have in the state of Texas and the focus that is not being kept on everyday Texans and our safety and welfare, I guess, if you could say. So it definitely has put a bigger spotlight on the issue. And it's given us an opportunity to have more of a reach when we do talk about the issue. So yes, sir, it has helped, I guess you could say, for us to spread the message.
I have to ask you now, Texas is not part of the national grid. Any of the politicians there that made it that way, and it goes back years since they haven't been connected, are they thinking now that maybe they should be connected? I'm just wondering if that's popped up yet.
It depends who you talk to and who's in the room, I guess you could say. Some are saying yes, some are saying no. There's a lot of other issues that are happening right now that folks are worried about, and it is on purpose. It's trying to you know, look over there, look what's happening, you know, over there. Those folks over there are trying to take your jobs, or those folks over there are trying to you know, speaking of just other issues that are happening, to take the focus away from the catastrophe, the winter storm that happened. And we never addressed it. It was said it was addressed in this last legislative session, or the regular session, I'm sorry, and which it wasn't. And so, you know, it's something that we need to focus on. We need to make sure we keep our eye on the ball and not let this go.
Well, right now, nothing's getting done because the Democrats decided to leave Texas. And I want to get into that. That has to do with the voter suppression. So, Leonard, can we do another segment here on the show?
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Leonard Aguilar is his name, and he's the Secretary-Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, TexasAFLCIO.org, TexasAFLCIO.org. Later in the show, Robert Espinoza is going to be joining us, talking about the direct healthcare workforce, which has been in jeopardy for many, many years. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. And don't forget, we're available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute and sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Leonard Aguilar is joining us on our live line today. He is Secretary-Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, TexasAFLCIO.org. You could follow them on Twitter at TexasAFLCIO. Leonard, I want to talk about the session down there that's, I guess, on hold because the Democrats decided to leave the state. But let's get into COVID first, if you don't mind. You are one of the hot states when it comes to the Delta variant breaking out. Can you give us an update on the status, what's happening there? And I guess the kids are getting ready to go back to school, right?
Yeah. Kids have started. A few school districts already started going back, and a few more start this week, today, and so on in the weeks coming up. But it's a mess. We have no leadership in any way, shape, or form. Or we do, I guess you could say. We have leadership from the governor's office, who is saying that school districts and local authorities cannot do anything to help prevent the spread. We can't, at the local level or school districts, we can't have masks. We can't do anything whatsoever. It's just it's mind-boggling that he is doing what he's doing, or he's not doing anything. However you want to look at it, it's concerning. It's upsetting. We're in a bad spot. Hospitals across the state, the ICUs are filling up. the different counties are putting out, you know, emergency alerts, you know, asking people to mask up or to stay home if possible, and try to keep the spread down. But unfortunately, with again, the failed leadership that we have at this point, it's going to be difficult, because when these schools get back together, it's going to be hard when you get all the kids in one place. One of the school districts, I believe, I can't remember the name of it. I think as of last, they started last Monday. And again, reading it this weekend, they had 31 staff members and over 200 students, 220 students, I believe, have tested positive or have contracted COVID just since Monday. So it doesn't take very long, and we definitely need to do more to help stop the spread. That's for sure.
I don't get this this effort to ban mask wearing. I don't understand that. If you want to wear a mask, though, you can do it. It's just that they don't want to order anybody to wear masks. Is that how I understand it?
Yes, it's not. If you want to wear one, you can. And those of us who are concerned for ourselves and for our neighbors, we're putting them on. And we're wearing them, even though, you know, I admit I don't like it. But it's something that we have to do to help each other at this point in time. But yes, sir, the school district is not allowed to put the mandate. So they are not going to force anybody to wear a mask, students nor administration or faculty. So nobody has to do anything that they want. And one of the other scarier things that's happening with that is the Texas Education Agency a couple of days ago came out with a set of rules with one of the main ones saying that they did not have to report any positive COVID cases in the schools. So if somebody did test positive in the school, that they did not have to notify parents or the students, which again makes complete nonsense, makes no sense whatsoever. But that's what we're dealing with here in the state of Texas, and unfortunately that's the hand that we're dealt with at this time.
Now, what kind of reaction are we getting as a result of that? I mean, is there pushback saying, wait a minute, we think you're going in the wrong direction, because obviously this is not what the science is all about, right?
No, you're exactly right. And the school districts, a few of them are coming back and pushing back on that, like you said, and they're going to hold their own special meetings and put this in front of their, you know, in front of their districts. And they are going to go against it looks at this moment that they're going to go against the mandate or the executive order to not require masks on campuses and such. So I'm hoping that our local school districts, take control of their issues and their local areas and their schools and their students, and they do the right thing. And like you said, follow the science. I mean, that's the thing that we have to do, is just follow those, you know, follow the doctors and the scientists. We don't follow politicians when it comes to medical issues or diseases and things like that. We need to follow those that actually have knowledge in the subject.
Yeah, it's quite obvious they're trying to push this under the rug as if it didn't exist. And people are dying every day, like you indicated. The hospitals are at maximum capacity right now. All right, let's switch to voting here. I was reading over the weekend, the Democrats have yet to come back to the legislature there. They're still camped out, I believe, in Washington. Is that the case?
Yeah, the Democrats or... some of them have not come back. We have there are I don't know the exact number, but there are still those folks that are part of the House Democratic Caucus that are still up there. And just on that note, I need to say thank you to Chairman Turner and the rest of the House Caucus. Those folks have sacrificed so much to be gone from their families and their jobs and their lives. You know, to live out of a hotel and take the fight to D.C. because they're not getting any cooperation here in the state of Texas. You know, we thank them for the work and the sacrifice that they're doing, and their families as well, because it's not easy to be away from home like that. So thank you to them. But some of them are still in D.C. From what I understand, you know, they're still going to keep fighting. And they did not have a quorum when they tried the second session. They didn't have enough. But it wasn't just because of the Democrats not being there as well. It come to find out that we have some Republican members that have come down with COVID, from what I understand. So they are quarantining. They are having to quarantine for the 14 days or the 10 days as well. So it appears, I mean, things could change day to day, but as of right now, or what was it, Saturday, it didn't look like they were going to be able to get a quorum for a few days.
And that's probably a good thing, because the bill would make it much harder for workers and people of color to vote in Texas. It's SB 1, Senate Bill 1. Leonard, can you give us some specifics on that? I mean, how bad is the bill that they want to pass in Texas?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. It's targeted at specific groups, and you know, videos that have come out here just since last night are recordings of Republican lawmakers talking about the reason for the bill is just to keep the state red. It isn't for voter protection or voter integrity. It's just to keep the state red. And they were caught caught on tape or recorded saying those exact words. So, but it is bad. The partisan poll watchers. So having somebody in the polling while you're casting your vote, that could be that is a partisan poll watcher that can be right there within a couple of feet of you or right over your shoulder as you're trying to cast the vote. And if they are, as we've seen time and time again, there are people that are very aggressive and very, very rude and can intimidate folks. And so partisan poll watchers is a thing that is concerning. You know, hours of change and changing of hours, changing the mail ballots or the absentee ballots is another issue in the bill. I mean, just going down the list of things that are there, it's just drop box locations, you know, each county having one box. So you can go from a town like Houston, Texas, which, you know, is just has millions, you know, not millions, but, you know, over a million people in it, to a small Texas county or city that has a couple of thousand, and they both have the exact same number of drop boxes, which would be one, is from what I understand. So just anything and everything to help slow down the trend of what's happening with the voters and the voting in the state of Texas. And again, like I said at the beginning there, so they can keep the state red is what they were saying walking out of the session on Saturday afternoon.
I'm just wondering, does this piece of legislation allow like a commission or a panel that can overrule the vote of the people if they say, oh, there's we understand there's some fraud here. There's some voter fraud here. So this election doesn't count. It's going to go to the other person.
That's another. Again, like I said, there was just a whole list of things. And that's another one from what I understand. Yes, sir. Is where it can just discount the election that happened. It's concerning that they're with the number of cases, and yes, they there have been some issues with voter fraud, but in the millions and millions and millions of ballots that have been cast, I mean, we're talking, you know, a very small number. The number I remember is 154 with the amount of votes. It just doesn't make sense. There isn't a problem, and it's something that, again, it's just to keep the state red. It isn't to fix anything, because there's nothing broken at this point, at this moment in time. It's a matter of just keeping people down. Again, the voting rights that are out there, voting rights are workers' rights. And if we do not work for them, and if we don't work to protect them and work with those friends that we have in the legislature, then it's going to affect us in ways that we can't even see at the moment. And taking care of workers at the end of the day is the main issue for us at the Texas AFL-CIO. And if we don't, the voting rights, like I said, are workers' rights, and we have to try to do everything we can to protect those rights.
I hear you. America is changing. Texas is changing. And a lot of people don't like that change. And that's exactly what's happening here. Leonard, we're going to leave it on that note. Leonard Aguilar, Secretary Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, also comes from Local 142, with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters. How about you do a little shout out here? You still keep in touch with the folks down there?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We're actually getting together. Be heading down there this week. Go talk to my business manager Mark Potter and go see the guys for a minute. It's hard to get down there because we got these special sessions. You know, the regular session rolling in now to the second special. So if we can get out of Austin, we can get back to trying to get back to a regular routine, I guess. But looking forward to getting back to San Antonio and visiting with everybody over at the local.
Yeah, I hear it's a beautiful city too. So you take care. Be safe. Let's do this again down the road. You got a lot of issues there that we want to make sure that our listeners are up to speed on. All right, my friend?
I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Leonard Aguilar, Secretary Treasurer, Texas Labor Federation, TexasAFLCIO.org. Quick break. When we come back, Robert Espinoza is going to talk about the direct care workforce in healthcare. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyAndFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and that's also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now and welcome Mr. Robert Espinoza, who's with an organization called PHI National. Website is phinational.org. And they represent workers in the direct care workforce, specifically dealing with health care issues. And the whole idea here is to improve funding for that workforce, which is a very low-paid workforce. Mr. Espinoza, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, if you don't mind, if you could give me a little more detail on the organization, PHI National, I gave just a little description. I would imagine you, as Vice President of Policy, can explain more of what PHI National is. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So, PHI, we are a national organization that focuses on strengthening the direct care workforce, so home care workers, residential care aides, and nursing assistants who provide critical daily support to older adults and people with disabilities in a variety of long-term care settings. And we do that work through research, through advocacy at all levels, and through designing workforce interventions like training. We've been around for about 30 years.
Now, I understand you have a new report out dealing with federal priorities, and we've got a new administration here, not real new, but Joe Biden's been very labor-friendly here. I'm just wondering, maybe you can give us some details on this report and where you want to go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we released a report last month issuing about 47 concrete recommendations for the White House, for Congress, and for key federal departments and agencies. And the purpose of the report was to identify what are all the ways in which a more friendly presidential administration can support direct care workers, whether it's through financing and compensation, or through supporting training and advanced roles and other workforce interventions, or even improving data, equity, the public narrative, and so on. We really think that this is a critical time in our country, both because of what the COVID-19 crisis has illustrated, how essential yet undervalued these workers remain, but also because we have a president that has already expressed interest and support for direct care workers and for expanding home and community-based services. So it's a critical time for this report.
Well, Biden has said a number of times that he wants to build the care economy, and I obviously that's part of the direct care workforce. What kind of dialogue? Are you having any dialogue with the White House on this, especially now with this report being out?
We are. I mean, we've been in dialogue really since December, January, looking at, you know, what are the ways in which a bigger investment in the care economy can fully support the direct care workforce, you know, increasing their wages, providing better training and stronger training standards, creating advancement opportunities for workers so that they can advance in their careers and hopefully see an elevation in title and compensation, and a wide range of supports that would make home and community-based services that much more accessible, and it would make it more sustainable in the long term. So we've been in dialogue with the White House and with key departments and agencies. And last month, we testified before Congress about the importance of supporting this workforce. So it's a critical time in our history.
What kind of reaction did you get from our lawmakers when you did that testifying?
You know, for the most part, it was very supportive. I think we heard from a number of members of Congress who expressed a lot of the ideas that are actually in the report and that many advocates for decades have argued about this workforce, that, you know, if we don't improve the quality of jobs for direct care workers, then it's consumers or older adults and people with disabilities who will suffer the consequences, and that we really need to better understand which interventions should be funded, how do we kind of raise the floor and create career ladders for these workers, and how do we prioritize them in a federal agenda, because so many people are needing this type of service and support in their homes and in a variety of settings like nursing homes and assisted living. So for the most part, they were very supportive.
Now, I know the wages and the benefits are not very good. Maybe you could speak to that. Where are we with wages, average wages? And as a result of that being not very good, I can only imagine there's a lot of turnover in that field. What's the story on that, Robert?
Yeah, absolutely. So the median wage for direct care workers is about $12 an hour, and it's a wage that has only increased by, you know, 20, 30 cents in the last 10 years when you adjust it for inflation, which is just unconscionable given how, you know, cost of living increases, but also how valuable this work is. We also know that this wage isn't competitive in most states. When you look at the median wage of other occupations with similar entry-level requirements, direct care wages are lower in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. So it tells us that we're at a point in which workers are not able to survive on these wages, but they're also not staying in the sector, and we're seeing high rates of turnover because of that. Of course, what does this mean for all of us who rely on workers? It means that the likelihood we'll find a high-quality trained worker in our community is becoming kind of less and less possible. So it's a crisis that affects all of us.
So let's get back to this federal priorities report. Does that report spell out where the wages should be? I would imagine they would go up gradually. Can you give us any information on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would certainly support, and the report supports, the Better Care, Better Jobs Act, which is a bill that was introduced as part of this care economy infrastructure approach to invest about $400 billion in expanding home and community-based services, but also improving wages and jobs for direct care workers, which would make a big dent in how we support these workers. Additionally, we would argue for key federal departments to work together and with people in the field like PHI and others to develop a national compensation strategy. What is the best way that we as a country can improve wages for direct care workers, recognizing that it's a tricky proposition, that there are Medicaid rate setting issues, there are these kind of benefit cliff and benefit plateau issues where low-wage workers often don't make more because what they lose in benefits outweighs what they would make if they worked more, and other kinds of complexities with state and national standards. And so we're arguing for federal departments to come together and really think about what is the best long-term way to improve those wages.
So let me get this straight. Medicaid dollars come in and say, let's just use a nursing home as an example. There's X amount of dollars, and that nursing home says, well, we have to pay our utilities, we got certain beds we have to buy and all that kind of stuff, and this is what we have left for wages, and that's where you get the $12. Is that kind of where we are with this right now?
Yeah, I think it explains most of it. I mean, I think that Medicaid is the primary payer of long-term care and thus of these jobs in the Medicaid-funded system. And so when funding levels are too low and reimbursement rates are too low for providers, then providers aren't able to, one, deliver the services they need to, but then also improve jobs for these workers. And so the financing of long-term care and the increased pressures on Medicaid is making it difficult to improve jobs for these workers. And it's part of the much bigger challenge of how we devalue both the lives of older adults and people with disabilities who need this care, but also of a workforce that's predominantly made up of women, people of color, and immigrants. It's a systemic issue, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as far as the future is concerned, I mean, we have an aging population. What is it? 10,000 people are turning 65 every day in America. I'm just wondering, if something is not done now, we're in big trouble, aren't we?
We are in big trouble. I mean, it means that the growing demand for direct care workers is increasing just every year. And when you take into consideration the new jobs that are being created to meet that demand, plus jobs you're losing from turnover and from people who exit the labor force, we estimate that between 2019 and 2029, the long-term care sector will need to fill about 7.4 million job openings in direct care. That's a monumental challenge given the fact that these jobs are so low in quality. So it's really time for a federal investment in this workforce.
Absolutely. Robert, I got one more question here, and it has to deal with the pandemic and COVID-19. And I was just wondering, with that being said, and you know nursing homes got hit really, really hard with the pandemic. And what about the workforce here? I mean, are more people getting vaccinated here to protect themselves? What's the story?
Yeah, unfortunately, not enough workers are getting vaccinated, and it has become a concern, especially in nursing homes where the possibility of transmission is that much greater. I do think we're going to begin seeing even more vaccine mandates at the employer level, where nursing homes and home care agencies and others mandate that their workers be vaccinated to really protect a clientele that is especially vulnerable to the complications of COVID-19. And I also think there will be a trickle effect where other kinds of businesses like theaters and sporting venues, et cetera, as they begin mandating vaccines, that's going to trickle down also and impact the ways in which this workforce is vaccinated. Unfortunately, vaccination rates are much lower in certain states. So as with anything involving this workforce, the variance across states is still pretty significant. It really depends on where you live. But we are at a critical time where we need to begin just tackling and ending this crisis.
Well said, and we're just about out of time. Mr. Espinoza, thanks for joining us today. Robert Espinoza is the Vice President of Policy at PHI, where he oversees its national advocacy, research, and Public Education Division on the direct care workforce. Definitely needs a lot of attention. PHINational.org is a website. Thank you so much for joining us, and please keep in touch, all right?
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the communication workers and the local building trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.